We're joined on Saturday Spotlight, the first edition of the Saturday Spotlight, by Paul Edmonds, new play-by-play man on TSN 1290 at the Winnipeg Jets. Paul, thanks for joining us. And, you know, Paul, I want to start off going way back to April 1996, when the Winnipeg Jets left Winnipeg on their way to Phoenix. What were your thoughts at that time? Like, growing up as a hockey fan in Winnipeg, what was going through your head when the Jets left town?
Well, I think a lot of emotions and a lot of feelings, for sure. I think that I always, like a lot of Winnipeggers or Manitobans, held out hope that there was going to be some sort of a last-minute deal to keep the team here. But when we look back on the history of it, we shouldn't be surprised that they actually did leave, because the team had started to have problems going back to the early 90s, and, you know, it was just basically a stay of execution. And there was different ownership groups that were trying to build arenas, and they were trying to funnel money from infrastructure projects to build arenas through the government, and there was public-private shares. There was all sort of many different parts that were moving all at the same time. And then, of course, you get to that last season, which was 95-96, which I remember going to a number of games at the start of the year, and it was quite sad. I mean, I remember Ottawa came in here, and there was like 8,000 people in the building during that last season with the Jets. And then it got really interesting, because people realized that this was the last opportunity that they were going to see the NHL and the beloved Winnipeg Jets 1.0. And by Christmas, the building started to fill up, and then you couldn't get a ticket for the last 10 home games. And, you know, that was great to see, but it was a little too little, a little too late. And one of my most vivid recollections of that whole season and the way things unfolded was about four home or three home games remaining. Philadelphia came to town with Eric Lindros, and I got tickets to go see the game. The Jets won the game 4-2. Lindros and Tkachuk actually got in a scrap fairly early in the game. It was a dandy, and the place was pretty raucous, and I left with a pretty good memory of all of my Jets days that go back to the WHA as a kid, getting tickets as a patrol through elementary school. So I left with a fond memory there, but definitely, Richie, a lot of heartache like everybody else, and I definitely, for sure, had a hangover with the NHL for a few years after that. It was very emotionally draining, and I think that that lasted for a number of years in our community.
Did you ever think that they would come back, Paul?
I thought that based on... Yeah, I did. I didn't know when, but I thought there was always an opportunity, and I think the first thing that needed to be done was a new building. And, you know, True North and the Chipman family were able to get that done. And then you had to have an owner that that was deep-pocketed, and obviously, you know, Mark has been able to go out and find a partner to be able to do that and make the team financially viable. I also think that we had to have an attitude change here. And in some ways, whether it was latent, subconscious or not, I think that we, as a community, step back and say, okay, why did we lose this team? What happened here? And in a lot of respects, it was, well, the team never got supported. People didn't want to put their money down to really go and watch the NHL. Perhaps we looked at our diminishing population, which is growing again for our city now, and we needed to get bigger as a city. So there was all sorts of different elements that had to come into play. But yeah, I didn't lose hope that we would never get the team back, because I know there was a lot of prognosticators that had that attitude, and I was never one of them. I just didn't know what the time frame would be, and as it turned out, it took 15 years.
You said you were growing up, you know, you grew up on the WHA and, of course, then the NHL. What are your radio memories, Paul, of the Jets during those times? Obviously, now you're going to be the play-by-play guy for the Winnipeg Jets, and be young kids like you were listening to you. What were your memories radio-wise?
Well, my memories go back to Ken Nicholson. And that was in the WHA days. And, you know, he was real good. I didn't realize how good he was at the time because I was a kid. But I remember, and I've told this story before, but I think it begs mentioning again, almost maybe ad nauseum, Richie. But I got a transistor radio as a kid. I can't remember if it was for Christmas or birthday or whatever. But I remember tuning into Jets games while I was supposed to be sleeping and listening to the games. I mean, that was that important to me. I was playing the game as a kid, organized hockey. I loved it. Had dreams like everybody else, but I really liked the aspect of the broadcast medium. And I also, I had an uncle in the business. He was in the newspaper business, but I was able to kind of follow him around a little bit and kind of got starstruck with the ability to cover sports as a job. And I thought, you know, this is something that if it doesn't work out in my playing career that I would like to pursue. So from an early age, I had a pretty good idea of really what I wanted to do. And then, of course, it was how do you get there? From there, you know, I got into high school and then into college, and I was a big fan of the Winnipeg Jets in the NHL as a late teenager, early 20-year-old with Kurt Kiel back on the radio. You have to remember, even at that time, we're talking late 80s, early 90s, that the games just weren't available on TV like they are now. Mm-hmm. So radio was the medium to follow the team, and there was no Twitter, there was no internet. So if you had any interest in following what the team was doing, especially on the road, the radio was your only sort of companion or your only source to be able to bring you that that game. So, you know, I went from Ken Nicholson to Kurt Kielbach, and I think as I got older, for sure, the Kurt Kielbach experience with me listening to him really fostered more beliefs that this is what I wanted to do.
And you're a homegrown Paddock, of course. You know, Paul, you attended Red River College Creative Communications Program. How did that program, you know, prepare you for the career that you embarked on?
Well, it certainly gave you a news judgment. It certainly stressed the ability to write, and I think that one thing that sort of the mantra was, even going back then, I don't know whether it still exists, but I would think so, they always said, if you write well, you speak well. So there was a real emphasis on writing, and I really kind of took the ball and ran with it from that standpoint and really tried to become a better writer, you know, with grammar and spelling and mm-hmm. all the elements that go into being a decent writer. But at the same time, I think what it did was it expanded your vocabulary so that you were able to introduce yourself to new words and then use them verbally, which I think really helps as a broadcaster as well, so that you're not stumbling around and fumbling for the right word to describe something, especially in radio, where it is the theater of the mind and you have to be descriptive. And sometimes instead of using a phrase, you can use one word to get that point across to the listener. So the Creative Communications program was excellent for me. It taught me a lot. The broadcast end of things, I had some decent radio teachers. I had a good journalism instructor. So it gave me a news sense, a journalism sense. It certainly gave me structure on what was right, what was wrong. And then the other part of it is they encouraged you to really go out and get the practical, and whether that was pro bono, which a lot of it was, mm-hmm. To build up that resume fodder, you were encouraged to do that, and I certainly did that. I did a lot of freebies and loved every minute of it because I knew that at some point somebody was going to pay me to do this, and ultimately they have.
I'm joined by Paul Edmonds for the first edition of Saturday Spotlight. Paul, of course, the new play-by-play voice for the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290. Paul, what was your first job in radio?
It would have been, I think the first full-time job would have been with the Regina Pats. It was interesting because at that time, in the late 80s, going to the early 90s and then into the mid-90s, radio stations had gotten away from retaining play-by-play guys as also their sports directors, and it really kind of happened throughout the West in junior A hockey and then into major junior as well. And I was one of those guys that went from being in the journalism field and particularly print and doing some radio as a color guy in Swift Current on a part-time basis to a full-time play-by-play job with the Regina Pats in the Western Hockey League, but I wasn't employed by the station. I was actually employed by the Regina Pats. Mm. So we had an affiliation and a relationship and a partnership with the radio station, but the radio station at that time, a lot of them didn't want to incur the cost of having a full-time employee to do play-by-play and then be a sports director. So what they wanted to do was provide the time, they wanted the content, but they didn't want the salary. So the teams took those on, and I was one of those guys. So For a lot of years, I used to joke with buddies that I sold out a long time ago when it came to journalistic integrity because I was actually working for the team in broadcasting. But that would have been the first one that was full-time, was with the Regina Pats, and we were on a couple of different stations the couple of years that that I was there. But that was a great experience for me and really kind of kick-started my play-by-play career for sure, not only in hockey but definitely in baseball, because I actually, in between the years that I did the Regina Pats, they would cut me loose for the summer. There was no requirement to have a media guy and a play-by-play guy full-time. So I actually used a hockey demo tape to get my first baseball job in 94 in Lethbridge, which was kind of odd. But, you know, as they say, the rest is history.
And if my research is correct, you had an important meeting at the restaurant Pomodori's.
Yeah, Pomodori's. Yeah, no, it was, I guess... it's no longer there. I think the Safeway's there now, but it was in Madison Square, and I got the job in 94 in Lethbridge in the Pioneer Baseball League, and my parents had tipped me off that Les Lazarek, who was doing the Gold Eyes games with Peter Young that first year that the team came back and won the championship, was moving on to do the Saskatoon Blades in the Western Hockey League. So there was an opportunity for sort of a second radio guy in baseball. So I reached out to Peter Young, and the next thing you know, I was in for Christmas from Regina. And I sat down with Peter Young and Sam Cates at Pomodori's, and we had a meeting. And next thing you know, I was offered the job, and we talked talked money, of course, and I wasn't really in that big of a position to grind anybody, so I accepted what they offered, and, you know, 19 years later, I resigned from the Gold Eyes after what I would have to categorize as a pretty decent career on the air with the local professional baseball team.
That's an understatement, Paul. When you took the job with the Gold Eyes, how long did you think you'd be there for?
Well, through the 90s, I thought at that time, Richie, there was still some AAA teams that existed in Canada, Edmonton and Calgary. And I actually had an opportunity to go to Calgary and do the AAA games, and I thought, okay, this was sort of the advancement that I was looking for. Because the AAA, as you know, or the mm-hmm. AHL, you're one step away, right? Even in our careers or our chosen fields. And it turned out that the station that was negotiating the rights for the Calgary Cannons didn't get the play-by-play rights, so therefore they didn't require me, so I stayed on here. And I think early on I was looking to advance, and wherever that meant I had to go. The one thing I quickly discovered, though, at least in baseball, was I was born on the wrong side of the border, and it was real tough for anybody to try to convince U.S. immigration that you were better at calling baseball than some American guys. So I knew that my advancement was fairly limited until you got to the major league level, and it would have to really exist in Canada. And then as teams started to float out on the AAA level of Edmonton and Vancouver and Calgary and Ottawa, you're kind of looking around going, boy, I'm in a pretty good spot here, and I'm in my hometown.
Right.
So I think I got to somewhere around 2000 and realized that this is where I was going to make my home, and this is what I was going to do, and this is the team I was going to do it with for the foreseeable future.
You know, you call obviously hockey and baseball for a long time, Paul. I heard Matt Devlin, the voice of the Toronto Raptors, recently say in an interview that the best way to learn how to be a broadcaster, in his opinion, was to call baseball. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've never really thought of that, but it was definitely a challenge. I'll tell you a story. My hockey career was really first and foremost, and then as I mentioned, sort of serendipitously or the need for more money over the course of a summer, I got into this baseball thing. Now, notwithstanding, I always loved the game of baseball too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Lethbridge, and I was on the first broadcast that I was doing, and the sports director walked in at one point and into the press box and walked right over to where my equipment was. And, you know, you always have a crowd mic, right? And there was a little knob to adjust the crowd mic, and he came over and he turned the crowd mic way up. And I realized that there was quite a bit of dead air in between pitches because I wasn't filling properly, and he at least wanted something going across the line and through the radio. So that really made me realize that you have to be able to weave some stories or some conversation, which essentially you're talking to yourself in between balls and strikes. So yeah, it certainly made me a better broadcaster from the standpoint that you had to be relaxed, you had to be poised, you had to be prepared, you had to just kind of throw the fear of saying something wrong or the fear of failure or anything right out the window and just talk. And it's kind of like the game of hockey in a lot of respects. You hear coaches say, you know, if you're out there thinking, you're not reacting. You just need to react. And I've always reminded myself, or I did for a long time, that if I got on the air and I was constantly thinking about what I wanted to say, it wasn't going to work that way. You had to develop a flow and you just had to go with it. So that was another thing too, is the flow of the game. It took a little while, but you develop that after doing more and more games. And then of course, as the seasons go along, you built that that experience in the back of your brain to recall certain plays or players or scenarios, and all of that goes into kind of producing a better broadcast as well, because you have that experience to draw back on from, not even a book or a binder, but from your own recollection in terms of your memory. So yeah, baseball I think really helped make me a better broadcaster for sure. How could it not when you do that many games? And if you didn't do them very well, I'm sure that they would have found somebody else. But when I look back at that first game in Lethbridge with the sports director walking in and turning up the crowd mic to where I got to last September in my last baseball game with the Goldeyes, I'd come a long way.
Did you have a broadcasting idol growing up, Paul?
A broadcast idol? You know, it probably would have been either the two guys, the aforementioned gentleman that I talked about in Ken Nicholson or in Kurt Kielbach, definitely, because they were local guys here and we followed the team that way, and they were hockey and I wanted to get into that. You know, I always admired Bob Costas for his ability to not only broadcast baseball but have talk shows or host national TV events. I've always thought a lot of Bob Costas, and certainly as I got a little bit older and we had the ability to watch more games, whether it was through center ice or extra innings packages through our cable providers, or in my case, Bell Satellite at home here. You know, if I had an opportunity the last several years to come home and watch West Coast baseball, it was going to be Vin Scully and the Dodgers. And I'm not even really a Dodger fan. I just really admired the longevity that he's had in his career and the ability that he's had to really tell stories and paint pictures and do it just such with a relaxing voice and a tone that just kind of draws you in and makes you feel real good. So in terms of idols, there was nobody that I had a poster on my wall in my bedroom of, for sure, but there was definitely guys that I listened to that I thought were really good, and I listened intently to see how they were good, how they presented themselves and the game, and certainly what made them to be the icons that I thought that they were. There was even guys like in the Western Hockey League when I was younger, kind of growing up, that I would listen to. Kelly Moore would be one of them. I remember when Kelly was in Kamloops and I thought Kelly was really good. There was a guy in Lethbridge named Steve Falwell that I thought was really good. Rob Carney in Moose Jaw I thought was an excellent play-by-play guy in hockey. You know, so there was guys across the league that when I was younger and kind of filling my boots in this thing as a Cub broadcaster, that I was listening to a lot to see how they did things and how I could get better by, in some cases, mimicking them or, just kind of stealing some tricks of the trade.
I'm joined by Paul Edmonds on the Saturday Spotlight. Paul is, of course, the new voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290. Paul, you mentioned the hockey calls, that, you know, play-by-play experience you had in the past, and most recently you've also been calling Selkirk Steeler hockey games. I want to ask, you know, calling hockey games, calling baseball games, your vast experience in baseball, thousands of games that you've called, what's the biggest difference between calling a hockey game and calling a baseball game?
Well, definitely pace, for sure. I mean, the game's way quicker, that being hockey over baseball. But I think that the two games, you have to know players, so that's number one. you have to do your homework on records, tendencies, stats, those kinds of things. So there are similarities that way in terms of your preparation. But the games are completely different in the speed that they're played at. And so, you know, to be able to go from baseball where it's a little bit more relaxed and you pull back a little bit and you don't have to be talking all the time, and you can take a couple of seconds in between pitches to, as we say in the business, or I was taught, to let the game breathe a little bit. Mm-hmm. Hockey, certainly on radio, which I think differs from TV for sure, you have to be on top of everything. And the one thing that I think that you always want to keep in mind with hockey play-by-play is, and you get asked this or get told this or by listeners, where is the puck? With baseball, you kind of have an idea of where the ball is because it's always going back to the mound before the play starts again. And then when the ball gets put in play, you're going to mention where the ball is. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't happen as often as hockey. Hockey, it's constant up and down. You know, it's north-south. And you have to let the listener know where the puck is. So that's the element, I think, that's really the difference is where the play is and where the object that you're trying to score with is located on the ice. So pace of the game and certainly some of the other nuances would definitely say that the games are different when you're calling them. But in a lot of respects, the preparation and certainly the ability to get prepared to do the games is much the same.
And you talk about, you know, learning how to let the game breathe, and I think it's interesting now because you're going to be in the booth and you're going to have a color guy with you, which you've had before, Paul, but how much of an adjustment is that for you in terms of calling a, you know, 3-hour game on your own and then now calling a 3-hour game, as you mentioned, a different pace and also having somebody else in the booth?
Yeah, baseball's been interesting that way because I've always done it alone. And with hockey, I've always had a color guy for the most part, at least the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. I had Brandon Rewicki with the Selkirk Steelers and in the past and some other jobs I've always had a color guy. I really enjoy working with a color guy on the hockey broadcasts. I think that it adds an element to it for sure. Sometimes I think when you see guys that work alone, it's necessitated by cost, right? Especially right. At the minor league level or at major junior hockey or junior A. You work alone because they just don't have the budgets to pay two guys. So that's how you kind of end up having the ability to bring a broadcast as one voice and be as full as you possibly can. But no, I have really enjoyed working with color guys in hockey for sure. And, you know, I had a couple games with Shane Knighty last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a seasoned pro after 3 seasons of switching careers from player to broadcaster. And I've worked with Brian the last 3 years as well as his color guy. And we're going to work together this year. So I really enjoy having the other set of eyes for sure, and then certainly another opinion right beside you that you can feed on, and get what they're seeing out there too. I don't think it really hurts. You know, we're always talking about the numbers in hockey and analytics and the eye test and what's better or is it a combination. But I always think that certainly when you're looking at the game and you're broadcasting it as quick as it is, if you can have that extra set of eyes mm-hmm. and the eye test on what's going on and how teams are playing, whether it's in the offensive zone, the neutral zone, or the defensive zone, can certainly help and give the listener a better idea of what's happening on the ice.
I read that you called 112 games. You'd call 112 Gold Eyes games in 130 days and be riding the bus all the time. So is you know, 82 games over 7 months a piece of cake?
Yeah. I guess the other thing is you're traveling in the winter, right?
Uh-huh.
As opposed to traveling in the summer. And I think anybody that lives here would know that I think you'd rather be traveling in the winter than in the summer. So that's a difference for sure. You know, I think that any time that you involve yourself in a schedule as long as 82 games or as it was a couple of years ago with the Gold Eyes, 112, you know, there comes times where as exciting as your job is and how much you love it, I mean, you still have to kind of get yourself up and march yourself out the door, right? So is it a grind? No. But mentally, it is a bit of a marathon, so you have to prepare for that. And I don't really know that there would be much of a difference. I think that with hockey, you'll get a few more evenings off than you would in baseball because you play every day, and that would be ultimately the difference when you look at it. But still, there's going to be requirements to travel and time away from home. So there's a lot of similarities that way, too. It's just that you're playing a few less games. Now, you know, if the Jets get into the playoffs, Richie, you know, maybe there is the potential for somewhere of about 100 games, but maybe that might be a couple years down the road.
It may be. And you know, you talk about traveling, and of course, you know, a lot of the bus trips that you're taking with the Gold Eyes. Does that, you know, and putting in time, and it's a lot of time, a lot of those bus trips, does that make you appreciate more, you know, going to be able to travel the way you're going to be traveling with the Jets?
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it. Everybody, when the announcement came down that I was going to take over the role on the radio and do 60 of the 82 games, a lot of the feedback that I got from people was, you know, you've paid your dues. And I never really looked at it like that. Every time I was either driving or on the bus or whatever it was, whether it was in Major Junior Hockey, Junior A, or with the Gold Eyes, okay, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm ticking off another one of these days here on the bus going to OCN or down to Laredo, Texas, as I'm paying my dues. I mean, it was my job and I enjoyed doing it. But at the end of the day, I think whenever you've been at the minor pro level for as many years as I had been, to get this opportunity, you look and say, boy, this is really something else that I don't think that it will ever be lost on me, the move up from minor pro to the major leagues in terms of the amenities that you are given. And travel certainly is one of them, at least with the Jets, because it's all airline and it's charter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I definitely have an appreciation for that. And it's kind of funny. I'll tell you a story. The first year that I was asked to do some color was the first year the Jets came back, and I got to know one of the flight attendants on the Jets charter, and I was on a road trip, and at the end of the road trip, the team was flying home, I believe from Nashville, and he came up to me, and he kind of bent down in the aisle, and I was on the aisle seat, and he said, have you enjoyed the last week or so? And I said, yeah, why? Can you tell? He said, you've had a smile on your face for the last week and a half, and it looks like you've enjoyed yourself. And I think that kind of tells exactly what I'm trying to say and to answer your question, that, you know, I was just real, not just happy to be there, but certainly appreciative of the opportunity that was given even when I was just filling in a couple of years ago, and now it's become a full-time occupation for me. So, yeah, there's definitely appreciation. You've heard that throughout sports, too, is the guys that have been the journeyman minor pros that finally get there and never really lose touch or the recollection of where they came from, and I really believe that that's important.
That certainly makes you likable amongst other qualities, Paul. I want to ask you, you know, you talk about time away from home and working a lot of nights and the travel associated with it. How important is family and all of that, and, you know, being able to not only support you but, you know, pick up for when you're not there and other opportunities that you're not able to, you know, you're not able to see in life experiences because of the travel associated with your job?
Well, I think, and I'll be real honest and frank here, if you didn't have somebody at home that was supportive, as my wife Tanis is, this would be a non-starter. If you're coming home and, you know, you're getting it in your ear about time away or travel or days consecutively that you're not home to help out, it would be more of a burden than I guess sometimes it is because you are away. But everybody's adjusted here. I mean, let's face it, my kids until this summer didn't know Dad to be home. Because I had been doing baseball for 19 years and my oldest guy's 12. So everybody just was adjusted to when Dad would go away and when Dad would be home, and this is just sort of the way it is. And we're just going to, I guess, kind of extrapolate that this year, except it'll be just in the winter as opposed to the summer. So I think it starts at home. You have to have the support of your family, which I do, and that really stems from the foundation of the home. And in my opinion, that's my wife here, and she's very supportive. And I have really, through this summer, Richie, understood how busy she has been the last several years with the three kids and running off to baseball and soccer, because I lived it this summer. And I thought to myself, oh boy, how did she do this alone for all these years? You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
But she did, and I think that through all of that, I've gained a larger appreciation for her and what she had to do when I was not here and absent because of time commitments on the road with the baseball club that, as I said, will extend now to this winter with the Jets.
Final question for you, Paul, and appreciate you joining us on the first edition of Saturday Spotlight. What was your reaction when you were told that you'd be the new Jets play-by-play voice on TSN 1290?
Kind of surreal. You know, okay, is this really happening? Have I really achieved the heights that I wanted to get to, that for so long I didn't know if it was going to happen? Again, I got to about 40 years old, which was coming up 8 years ago, and I made the decision that I wasn't really going to chase the dream anymore, and I was going to be very satisfied continuing my career with the Gold Eyes and Junior A hockey and maybe filling in with the Jets here and there on the broadcasts on TSN 1290. And I was, you know, to use sort of a street word, I was pretty cool with that, you know. But then this comes along, and it's like, oh, okay, and what are you going to say? Even at 47 or 48 years old, no. You know, so very surreal, and I just kind of really looking forward to getting started in it and grabbing a little bit of ownership on it, if you can understand that, mm-hmm. and just getting a few games out of the way and really getting into it and understanding the players, the personalities, and just feeling comfortable, because I think that's important too. And once you get that comfort level, I think that the broadcast will be much better as well, because you're not worried about extraneous things and how you're doing or if it's okay. So yeah, it was quite a moment. Took a little bit of time to kind of sink in. But certainly something that I'm just ecstatic about having the opportunity to do, and very excited and very grateful for the opportunity from the station and certainly the administrative people that have given me the chance.
Well, it's very well deserved, Paul, and we appreciate you very much joining us today on the first edition of the Saturday Spotlight.
Richard, thanks very much. Anytime, and you guys on IC, keep up the great work.
I appreciate that, Paul. Thanks.